I wasn't going to go and publish it hardbound anymore, but I'm, as soon as I get done with all this convention business, I'm going to start seeing how I can go and finance and bring it out again, because it's really in demand. People are just effusive with praise of it. So, hey, when you get something like that that you've written, go with it, you know?
Well, obviously, and if people are trying to revive organizing in Cleveland, that'd be valuable to do, right? Might as well learn the lessons of what not to do as well as what to do. Now, how about things like the Ohio Organizing Collaborative? Does that have a footprint in? I know they get a lot of attention around the country whenever there's a battleground election coming. Do they have a footprint in Cleveland?
Yes, they do. And they recently started an office on Clark Avenue, which is right in the heavily Hispanic part of Cleveland. And I think it's really important that they did it. Unfortunately, they heard all the dire predictions of, blood in the streets virtually, and they elected not to be involved in it, in the demonstrations in Cleveland. I think some of their individuals did, but they bowed out on it. So that was one thing in Cleveland. There was so much hysteria and all that I really think it kind of cut down on our numbers, but it really didn't. But it didn't derail it. It was another attempt by the city to suppress dissent, suppress activism.
Well, we're talking about a happy ending in Cleveland. I mean, it may not have been happy for the Republicans. They obviously had a lot of division, but for progressives, obviously y'all seized the opportunity to get the message out, and it reverberated around the country as well. Randy, if people want to know more about Cleveland or your books when it comes out, how can they get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me. I'm on Facebook, and just under Randy Cunningham. Go right there. You can also get in touch with me at Randino, that's R-A-N-D-I-N-O, 49, at gmail.com. And if they want to get a downloadable version of the book, they can go to the Cleveland Memories Project. Or they can just try to Google Democratizing Cleveland.
That's good information. We thank you for being with us, and we'll keep up with the Cleveland story and see what happened. That was Randy Cunningham. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. We say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week, when we'll have another guest on Wade's World, this has been the voice of the people, www.kabf.org. 88.3 on your dial, 100,000 watts of people power. Thank you. This is Wade Rathke.
We had the Prophets of Rage, which is Tom Morello's successor group to the old iconic Rage Against the Machine.
Famous group. Okay. And, who are some of the speakers, Randy? Well, anybody, the listeners might know?
Well, some of those speakers were like Connie Burton, who's a... organizer from, I believe, Tampa, Florida. Then there was a lot of other people that just local that I really did not know, but I'll tell you, I'd like to know them better as far as poets and people like that. And
did you have a good crowd on Monday to welcome the Republicans to their convention? I didn't see the numbers.
You know what a odd process crowd estimates are. You know?
I know. That's what I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, I would say we had maybe about 1,000 or 2,000 people at this thing.
So that's a good representative number.
Yeah, well, I call it the best we've ever had since, say, the late 70s or early 80s when we had a viable network of community organizations, which I described in my book, Democratizing Cleveland.
And since then, the screws have really been put down on people in Cleveland. And, even the mildest advocacy-type efforts have been very much discouraged and repressed.
Well, we want to get into what's been happening at Cleveland. But so you had you're in poverty now, and did it get a good response in Cleveland?
I think it got a good response. I think people noticed it. It got on the press a lot and everything. And all the people that were involved in it felt really good about it. You know, they felt like we really pulled something off. And in contrast to the hysterics of the city fathers, not one arrest was made, and everybody ended up at the end of the march route, safe and unincarcerated. So
no blood on the streets and no mass arrest or police violence, just a standard couple of thousand people trying to tell the Republicans poverty should be on their list, huh?
Right. And it was, we felt really good about it. I mean, you know, the organizers were beyond exhaustion by the time we got through. I spent the next day not out on the streets, but in bed recovering.
People don't realize what hard work this organizing thing is, do they?
No, they don't. And wait, we're not getting younger. I mean,
well, luckily there's a lot coming behind us. There's been a lot of pictures of. Go ahead.
That is one thing that I think has to be said. There were a lot of young people. It was very diverse. We had the very front of the march was led by by some of the black groups like Peace in the Hood, and we had a good turnout from groups like Farm Labor Organizing Committee and a Latino group in Lorain that is an organizing group. And I can't recall their name right this very second, but we also had representatives from SEIU and especially representatives from the current Fight for 15 organizing project in Cleveland right now that's trying to get past a $15 minimum wage bill through city council. And if we don't do it, we're going to go and do a petition campaign, I mean, do an initiative
on the ballot,
November ballot.
So this sounds like it was a shot in the arm for progressives in Cleveland, from the way you're telling the story.
I think so, and I'm just describing the first of what I think were three major demonstrations and actions.
Well, tell us all about it, because as you know, this has not gotten the kind of attention that some of the Trump hysterics and speech, plagiarisms. That's what people have been reading. That's why we're doing this show. So tell us about some of the other actions people were taking to try to get their voice heard.
Well, I think I have been active ever since the mobilization against the war in Vietnam in October 1969. I've been an activist ever since. And we had the on Wednesday we had the Wall Off Trump effort action, and that was.
Now, I think you said the wall on Trump. That's cute, huh?
Wall off Trump.
W A L L. Huh?
Yeah, off O F F Trump.
Wall off Trump.
And,
okay.
And this was a mastermind by a group from Chicago called Mi Gente. And also with the technical support of the Ruckus Society.
Oh, okay.
Iraq vets against the war, and the Working Families Party, and the other 98%. And they did a bang-up job. They really did. They assembled all the materials at this, what we call the Convergence Center, which was in a Masonic hall in the near west side of Cleveland. And so what we did is they came in with just like almost a truckload of material. And they grabbed people like me, and they and we had ponchos. And when you spread your arms out, it says "Wall Off Trump." So we thought we were going to be clever, and we snuck up this street called East 4th Street. I was a little worried about that because in the past, the police have used that to kettle demonstrators. So, but anyhow, we made it up. We were told by our leaders, put on our ponchos. We spread out our arms, linked hands, and sang songs as we went up to Prospect Avenue, which is just fronting the queue. And so we were there for a while, and then we noticed all the police hustling down the street. And what it was the main body of the march, almost people about two or three times the number that we were in. And they had the banners, Wall Off Trump. And we extended the line of the wall about two blocks in front of the queue. And it was really great. It was led by Hispanics. It was very colorful. The press ate it up with a spoon, you know. And it was fun.
It
and
sounds great.
A great believer.
And what day was this? Tuesday before the convention?
This was Wednesday.
Wednesday, okay.
Because the convention started Monday.
Right.
And so we and I think it was one of the best actions I've ever been involved in my organizing life.
Well, that's quite a recommendation. We're talking to Randy Cunningham, longtime organizer and activist based in Cleveland, Ohio, who was part of the committee that put on the sort of opening inaugural welcome from grassroots and other organizations to the Republican National Convention. He's telling us about some of the other actions. So is the Working Families Party got a branch now in Ohio?
Not that I know of.
But they were helpful on this. Everybody came in to lend a hand.
They were our guests, and I helped house about 10 of them in the house.
Well, they're great people.
And, yeah,
so that sounds like the Wall Off Trump was a smash hit. And once again, good press
hit
in Cleveland, huh?
Well, yeah. I talked to some of the Ruckus Society people the next day, and they were just bubbly about all the covers that they got in the New York Times and all the various press plans. You know, The Spanish language press especially covered this, and like Telemundo and people like that, and they were interviewing a lot of the people from Mi Gente, and I just thought it was fantastic. And we actually had some members in our group that were from this peace poets out of New York City, who I just think the world of as entertainers. And they are not only performance artists, they're really great leaders in coordinated yelling.
Well, there you go. Now, you said there was another big action as well.
Yeah, there was. It was an action called Stand Against Trump.
Okay, I know that's gotten some publicity as well.
Yeah, that was a action that my wife and I took part in yesterday, and the origins of it are doctors that are in the various health systems in Cleveland. As you may know, Cleveland's a real kind of center for medical institutions, and
world famous Cleveland Clinic,
stuff.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and they heard all this stuff about what Trump was saying about Muslims and Mexicans, and they were saying, what the hell's going on? I mean, we work with these people every day. And they started producing T-shirts that said, Muslim doctors save lives, Mexican doctors save lives. And they decided to have this this action that where we marched across the Lorraine Carnegie Bridge with inside of the queue where the Republicans were. And it was led largely by doctors and nurses and other medical personnel. And
that's pretty dramatic. Those are not people we often see on the streets, do we?
No. And the thing is, it's another thing. is that it's not a bunch of people that the press easily dismiss. You know, they'll dismiss rabble rouser Randy Cunningham, but you start getting doctors and nurses protesting, and they pay attention.
Well, that's good. So, I hope they did. Now, did they have pretty good numbers for that action as well, or?
Yeah, I think it was smaller than the In Poverty Now.
Oh, sure.
Now, according even to some of the press that I know, they say that was definitely one of the largest demonstrations. I would say we had about 500-600 people.
Well, that's a good showing, particularly. Now, were they in their lab coats and everything, or how could you tell they were doctors?
Some of them, but it was brutally hot yesterday, as I can well imagine you know, and being in New Orleans. But they definitely promoted themselves as doctors and nurses and medical people, and they were saying, hey, these people we work with every day. And these are the people that Trump is coming down on like a ton of bricks.
You know? Were there any interactions with Republican delegates at all? Was there any time you thought, hey, maybe we're getting our message across?
Well, not too much that I saw, except I rode back to get my car on our rapid transit thing, and there was a homeless guy that I know that got into it with a bunch of Republicans, and I thought there was going to be a riot on a train.
Well,
but
dialogue at the top of their lungs, huh?
Oh my God, they were getting down.
Okay.
My wife and I were saying, "Oh Lord, we're going to have to fight our way out of this train."
Well, obviously, y'all were ride and die people. Well, good.
And this guy was originally from New Orleans.
I'm not surprised.
So that's
the way we roll down here. Now, in talking about the queue, I guess there was the usual sort of demonstration area that attracted a whole lot of groups, right? On an ongoing basis.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. At first, the city really had some really draconian event zones and stuff like that, and were really extremely restrictive on where you could march, stuff like that. And we messed with them for a while, and then we said, just the hell with it, we'll see you in court.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the most... the broadest coalition I think I've ever heard of suing the city over freedom of speech and freedom of assembly and dissent had Organize Ohio, which is a community organizing network that I work with most. Then we had Citizens for Trump, believe it or not, and then we had the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless. And we won. We beat them.
There you go.
The federal judge said, listen, you guys got to loosen up on this. This is ridiculous what you guys are doing to the city. And they put it under mediation. And I think the mediation was a success. Of course, you never get everything you want.
Of course not.
The situation is that. But we got a lot, and I think what we did is we opened up the whole process for a lot of every other group as well. So it wasn't just this, it wasn't a successful example of what I call special event fascism that so many of us have experienced with these conventions, where you know, like welcome to Cleveland, you know, I live in a police state, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that was one of the big accomplishments of our organizing, was that the ACLU representatives did a very good job and all. And I think on a broader level, I hope that this has kind of showed activists in Cleveland that we still have some mojo, that we can still do something,
Because as I said, there's been a very discouraging past three decades of, you know, like the foundations and the city elite and the city fathers and the city hall doing, I mean, whenever they hear the word organizing, their attitude is kill it before it multiplies. You know?
Yeah.
And they took, they really, it's been quite a backlash since the early 80s when the foundation started yanking funding from community organizations and all. You can't even be, in this town, it's hard to even be a halfway wild-eyed advocate, you know.
Well, let's look at some of the legacy of this. We're talking to Randy Cunningham, longtime activist and organizer in Cleveland, and he's been telling us about what the sort of rest of the story is. And Cleveland on the Republican National Convention, as people from all over the country tried to make sure the voice of the people was also heard there. Now, what will be the legacy of these kinds of activities in Cleveland? You're giving us a little insight into some of the ups and downs of organizing history. Obviously, there's a lot of things going on in Ohio. It's a battleground state. Will this have some impact on coming events or organizing the organizing climate in the future? You already mentioned the possibility of an initiative on the Fight for 15.
Well, I think so. You know, they all say demonstrations are for the benefit of the demonstrators, and I kind of think that's not entirely bad. I mean, it can be very discouraging day in and day out doing this work, and you don't see really any payoff and everything. So I think that the actions that we took and all was kind of like flexing our muscles in front of a mirror, you know? And I think that it very much improved, was a shot in the arm for the morale of the local activist community. And who can say what the eventual payoff is? But I think that we've kind of turned a corner in this town as far as you know, the ice age that descended on us in the early 80s, you know.
And that had to do with funding being withdrawn, or just organizations didn't survive?
Absolutely. What happened is we launched a campaign. It was a campaign masterminded by National People's Action to try to get funding for energy conservation and all from this Ohio Corporation, which at that time was a flagship corporation. Now it's BP. And if there was if there ever was kind of like an elite target, it was the Ohio Corporation. And as I was informing youngsters downtown, we actually broke up the 1982 Ohio stockholders meeting that was held in a major big fancy hotel downtown. And after that, the Ohio began calling foundations. And unfortunately, we were much too dependent on foundation funding. And there was, I think, a concerted effort to pull the plug on any sort of organizing group. You had to be nice and polite and say, "Mother, may we afterwards." And it totally destroyed a really viable movement. And there's been a lot of efforts to restart stuff, but the kind of trap of 501c3 continues to be sprung on people. And you and I have talked about this before. And so that's what happened in Cleveland. And it totally destroyed a very much limited activism. It's almost like the chestnuts that can still sprout in the forest, but they're soon killed off by the fungus, you know?
We don't hear many chestnut metaphors on Wage World. Thank you for that. But So you've written about this, I know, as not only as an organizer, but an author, because we've published some excerpts from your books and some articles by you over the last number of years in social policy. Tell us some of how you've tried to tell this story and turn it around.
Well, I'll tell you, I think that, I spent almost 15 years researching it. And I use my contacts from those days to get interviews and all. And I think I think this book is one of my proudest accomplishments. It is like a modern day a classic in Cleveland.
And this is Democratizing Cleveland. That's the book you're talking about?
Yeah, Democratizing Cleveland, The Rise and Fall of Community Organizing in Cleveland, 1975-1985. And it is what they call in the writing world an evergreen. It keeps on popping up. I keep on meeting people that says, you're the author of Democratizing Cleveland. That really meant so much to me and all. So I wasn't going to go and publish it hardbound anymore, but I'm, as soon as I get done with all this convention business, I'm going to start seeing how I can go and finance and bring it out again, because it's really in demand. People are just effusive with praise of it. So, hey, when you get something like that that you've written, go with it, you know?
Well, obviously, if people are trying to revive organizing in Cleveland, that'd be valuable to do, right? Might as well learn the lessons of what not to do as well as what to do. Now, how about things like the Ohio Organizing Collaborative? Does that have a footprint? I know they get a lot of attention around the country whenever there's a battleground election coming. Do they have a footprint in Cleveland?
Yes, they do. And they have recently started an office on Clark Avenue, which is right in the heavily Hispanic part of Cleveland. And I think it's really important that they did it. Unfortunately, they heard all the dire predictions of, blood in the streets virtually, and they elected not to be involved in this, in the demonstrations in Cleveland. I think some of their individuals did, but they bowed out on it. So that was one thing in Cleveland. There was so much hysteria and all that I really think it kind of cut down on our numbers, but it really didn't. But it didn't derail it. It was another attempt by the city to suppress dissent, suppress activism.
Well, we're talking about a happy ending in Cleveland. I mean, it may not have been happy for the Republicans. They obviously had a lot of division. But for progressives, obviously you all seized the opportunity to get the message out, and it reverberated around the country as well. Randy, if people want to know more about Cleveland or your books when it comes out, how can they get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me. I'm on Facebook, and just under Randy Cunningham. Go right there. You can also get in touch with me at Randino, that's R-A-N-D-I-N-O, 49, at gmail.com. And if they want to get a downloadable version of the book, they can go to the Cleveland Memories Project, or they can just try to Google Democratizing Cleveland.
That's good information. We thank you for being with us, and we'll keep up with the Cleveland story and see what happened. This is Randy Cunningham. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. We say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week, when we'll have another guest on Wade's World, this has been the voice of the people, www.kabf.org. 88.3 on your dial, 100,000 watts of people power. Thank you. This is Wade Rethke.